Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are, May 20th, 2015. It seems like just the other day I said, okay, well, we're starting the month of April, and then I go, well, April's over, and here's May. And now we're just, you know, a week and a half or so away from the end of May, and we're going to be into June, which is really just, like, amazing how quickly things change. We're going to have a little bit of a shortened show because we have to do some stuff away from here. But I wanted to say a couple things about radical change. I was reading this morning, and kind of what I'm doing pretty much every day now, if it fits, and is using Anne Graham Lotz's little morning thought, because it's just a few sentences usually, and it's just so provocative. But the title of it was Radical Change, and I was talking about this last week, and I'm going to be talking about this week again, Sunday. About the radical change that has to happen in your life. There has to be a radical change in your life. Now, that may not be radical according to me, and you don't look at me, you don't look at someone else you know, and say, well, my change has to be like their change. That's not what I mean by radical. The radical change is in you. From one thing to another thing. Now, you may not even, people may not really see it outside instantaneously. They may not even see it over a period of time because your sphere of influence may change. And then the people you're around only see the new you. So it's not something that everyone has to see the change. So in other words, you radically change every day. So people see you be nice and bad. You know, and not, that's not what we're talking about. You have to know that you've been transformed and that you're in a process of being transformed by the renewing of your mind, okay? So I'm reading Bonhoeffer's book. I actually read at it when I first got it, when it was first given to me a couple years ago by Metaxas. And now I'm reading it, and I'm kind of reading it in a different way. I'm just kind of skipping through. I'm not reading from the front to the back. I've read probably the first third, and then read in the back end of it to basically see how this book, how he put the end of the book. And then now I'm going back and through and kind of in the middle and reading different things, like when Bonhoeffer went to Harlem and was teaching there, when Bonhoeffer went to England, when he went to different places in Switzerland, he went to different places, and he just always desired to come back home to Germany. And this was during World War II, and it's just amazing because he was made very aware. He was a pacifist, and he had a dramatic change in his life where he actually was involved in the plot to kill Hitler. And he was still a pacifist, but he knew that Hitler was a very evil person. And one of the things that he said in his teaching, and he was a professor during Hitler's reign, he would teach, and it would appear on the surface to the average person that he was teaching what the, you know, German, the Third Reich wanted to be taught, but what he would say in private to people, and then he would say to the people who would understand, that the word Heil, which is hail, should never be ever uttered to anyone other than the Lord, and that it would on the surface appear that he said that our salvation comes through the German Chancellor, the Hitler, and through the German government, and through Nazis, and blah 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 blah. But in all reality, he would teach to people who would listen in his theological classes that salvation only comes through Jesus Christ, a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And he was a confessionalist. He was as hardcore fundamental as you could get. But it's weird because he was considered to be an ecumenicalist. But he meant that from the viewpoint of people from different, like Lutherans, Methodists, Presbyterians, Baptists, Episcopalians, should all be following the same Jesus. They may have different traditions, and that's fine, but the ultimate end of how they come to Christ and how they walk it with Christ should be the same. And it was weird because he dealt with that in Harlem in the 30s, and he dealt with that in Berlin in the 30s also. But here's what I'm talking about, a radical change. We need to get back to truth and even have more truth. I think back when I was in school and we studied, and it would just be probably in passing, the Holocaust and what happened during a horrible time there. I've actually been to Israel, and with the amount of information that you get there and go to the Holocaust Museum and talk to people who know that, if you don't study real deep, you don't get what I'm going to tell you now. But there needs to be a radical change on how we learn things, because Hitler was killing Jews in 1936. Now, we didn't enter the war until 1941, December 7th. A day will live in infamy, you know. We weren't even involved in the war yet. It wasn't really a world war. 1936, they were killing Jews. They had already been killing Jews before that. And so, and then it went on from there to anyone that was infirm, anyone of color, anyone of, you know, and they were personifying themselves as good Christian people. And it was so twisted on how that got wrangled around. So we need to know there was a good 5 years before 1941. And then towards the end of the war, the last few years of the war, it was just millions. I mean, it just escalated to millions. And Bonhoeffer went right back into the snake pit, went right back into to where he would possibly lose his life. And he did. He did. And it was only 3 weeks before Hitler took his own life, the snake that he was. We need to look at this and realize that he was willing for such a radical change in his life because he cared so much about his homeland, or as they would say, their fatherland, that he wanted the people there to know the truth of Jesus Christ. And he actually ministered to guards that were guarding him up to his execution, his hanging. And people that watched him hang said that they'd never seen anybody ever go to their death like him, with such peace. And he passed in such a short amount of moments. It's so weird to think that God's hand was on him, and I think that he was used in the same capacity as a Paul, in the capacity. I'm not saying he was at the same office, he wasn't an apostle or anything like that, but the same capacity. We need to remember this, that Paul was a man. Paul was a man. He's not divine. He's not God. You know, he's not a second savior. So we have to be very careful. And in my years and years of studying the Word, I've realized that we have to back away a little bit from being too Pauline. Too Pauline. You know, too Johannian, too Johnian. I mean, these were men. We have to look, who were they pointing us to? If Paul were here today, he would say, don't you use me. Use Jesus. You can use my testimony and say what happened here. But don't use me, because I'm just a man. But the one who saved me, the one who touched me, the one who spoke to me, the one who chastised me, the one who blinded me, the one who saved me, that's who we need to absolutely proclaim to people. So we don't want to say, well, if it was good enough, the Apostle Paul. No. Those are kind of funny, cute little jokes, but we should back away from those. But I want to tell you something about a radical change. Here's a radical change of maybe ways you can minister to people that don't believe. Just some scientific statistics. I'm going to give you three of them that are interesting. That just got me today. I watched a little 90-second video. And if you want to really live according to the Word of God, then speak out in front of people. And here's a good way to do it. Say, you can talk to somebody that doesn't believe in God or doesn't know if there's a God, an agnostic or a supposed atheist, and you can say to them, do you know scientifically 241 trillion gallons, I'll do it again, 241 trillion gallons of water fall on the earth every day. 241 trillion gallons of water fall onto the earth every day. Okay, and then there's a huge process of evaporation, and then this cycle. And the water goes back up and actually gets cleansed and then comes back down. But da, 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 da. It's a really interesting thing, because when we build little machines that purify water, it's like building a huge ecosystem that's already here and was built by someone. Now, wasn't it? Did you know that a hummingbird, we've been watching them the last couple of days at our place and our buddy Doug and Debbie's over at their house, just watching them. They get real close to you. they can flap their wings 90 times a second. Now watch this. I'm going to stretch it out how you do sometimes. 1,001. Now that was actually a little bit longer than a second, but 1,001. You can't count to 90 in a second. You can't. No one can count to 90 in a second, but they can flap their wings 90 times. They're like a giant bumblebee. That's amazing. And the third, the last one here. This is amazing too. You can look at all kinds of stuff. You can see about sharks when they strike and how they have a great white when it strikes and it pulls its mouth all the way back, exposes its teeth. That it has little shields basically that comes over its eyes when it strikes. It's just amazing. Well, a woodpecker, when it hits a tree, you can hear that echo if you've never heard it. I mean, we have blue jays that are pecking up on top of our roof, but a woodpecker smacks into that tree and it echoes through the woods. If you've never heard it, go online and see if you can find a recording of it so you can hear it if you've never heard a woodpecker hit a tree. It's amazing. But their eyes close just as their beak hits, and their brain has a special cushion to prevent from blunt force trauma or traumatic head injury. Because if you pounded your head against a tree like that, it would eventually kill you. So someone designed that. It didn't just happen. Because not every bird has that. Not every bird has that. Just the ones that function the way the woodpecker does. So that's just three little things that would make you go, and it might make you stop, and it might make you think, man, I got to look into this a little deeper rather than make a flippant comment that God doesn't exist. Speaking of a radical change, I'm going to end with what Anne Graham wrote, and it's amazing, because I'm not sure where you are, or what you're doing. But here's what was spoken in Genesis 12:1. Okay? Listen to what it said. Leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. God promised to bless Abraham, but Abraham would not receive all God had for him unless he claimed it by leaving everything. His familiar surroundings, his comfortable lifestyle, his old friends, his values, his job, his home, and even his family, and set out on a life of faith. God told him, leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go to the land I will show you. Abraham did not know where God would lead, just that he was to follow. God's command was clear. Abraham was to put God first in his life if he wanted to receive God's blessings. You need to do the same thing, people. I need to do the same thing. Faith is, the substance of things not seen. You don't see them. I have faith that God is going to, we have, again, more faith in our car until that day when you go to jump in and start it and it doesn't work just like we do on our lawnmower about every 2 years. Need to go get a new battery. Okay, here's the thing. We have more faith in our machines and stuff than we do God. We need to trust him and we need to be willing to just say, none of my stuff matters. My relationship with God matters. We need to have that kind of an attitude. And that's what Bonhoeffer did. That's what Paul did. That's what so many people we see throughout the scriptures did. Some of them did it reluctantly. Look at Jonah. He was reluctant. He's a prophet, but he was a reluctant prophet. I think more than reluctant. If Abraham obeyed God by putting him first and by following his lead for the rest of his life, things would be dramatically different. He must have known that God was not just adding a weekend hobby or an additional commitment to an already busy life. God was describing a radical change. Now, if you listen to this program and you come to our church, you're probably going to hear these facts again on Sunday because I think they bear repeating because I'm going to use them in my message for Sunday. But I just want you to understand and I want you to know that being a Christian isn't just adding a weekend hobby. Okay, it's not just an additional commitment to an already very busy life. Well, I'll see if I can squeeze out a church attendance this week. God is describing and was describing and will always describe because he is the same yesterday, today, and forever, a radical change. Bodie Bauckham is moving to Africa to take a position as dean in a seminary in Zambia, isn't it, right? Zambia. In Zambia, yeah, which is, you got South Africa, then you got Mozambique, then you got Zambia, then you got Democratic Republic of Congo, which you're working your way up, you know, through the 52, some of the 52 countries in Africa. Moving his seven youngest children, his wife and himself there, and I think it's because, and I don't know everything, but I think it's because he went there and saw people who truly wanted a relationship with Jesus Christ, and he wanted to raise his seven remaining kids. He's already got two grown, the seven remaining children, in a place where people actually loved Jesus and trusted him. And it's really strange that he has to go to Africa to do that. Too bad he couldn't go to Everett, you know, or Chicago. How are you doing in the radical change? Has there been a radical change in your life? There should be, and there could be. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not to your own understanding, acknowledge him in all of your ways. He'll direct your path. That's the truth. That's the bottom line. And we need to know that. We need to receive that. We need to believe that. We need to exercise that on a daily basis. Tomorrow's the 21st of May. Wow. It's amazing. We'll see you guys tomorrow at 11 o'clock.